You're listening to event audio from the Brookings Events Podcast, part of the Brookings Podcast Network. For more in-depth analysis and commentary from Brookings scholars and our guests, go to brookings.edu/podcasts or listen via Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Policy Podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us on this late Friday afternoon. And also to those who are following us on the live webcast. Sorry that the event got filled up quite quickly and we had to close a bit early for those who've reached out to wonder how they can register. I'm Brahima Koulibaly, Senior Fellow here and the Director of the Africa Program. So before we get going, I'd like to go over some logistics. The first is that we are also on Twitter, so if you want to follow and join the conversation, there, the hashtag is Securing Mali. Securing Mali. And for your convenience, too, we're providing simultaneous translation in French and English. As part of this program would also be in French. So if you don't have one of the devices and you do need one, make sure to get one. And for the questions part, we're going to do things a bit differently than we've done in the recent past. There are some question cards you must have received when you registered. So if you could write down your question, fill it out, and then raise your hand, a staffer will come and collect those from you so that when we get to the question and answer part, they can use those cards to ask your questions. And then finally, if we can ask you to remain seated at the conclusion of the event, which will allow His Excellency to make his way out on time for his next engagement. That would be very much appreciated. So it is really a distinct honor and a privilege to welcome to Brookings and to Washington His Excellency Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta, the President of the Republic of Mali. Your Excellency, on behalf of Brookings leadership, welcome. Soyez le bienvenu. Il danse. Initagama. Initie. I wasn't exactly expecting the translators to get this one right. It is in Bambara, the language commonly spoken in Mali and elsewhere in West Africa. And it simply means welcome and thank you. The Africa Growth Initiative program here was born really out of Brookings leadership's recognition of the importance of Africa's development and the need for a strong and independent voice on socio-economic issues of the continent. Since its inception 10 years ago, AGI, as it is called, with support from the Global Economy and Development Program that we are a part of, as well as from Brookings leadership, is fulfilling that mission by producing evidence-based research and recommendations to inform policies in Africa and toward Africa. AGI has also become a trusted partner and a neutral broker for policy discussions on opportunities and challenges of the continent. In connection with today's event, Brookings more broadly has been very attentive to the challenges faced by the so-called fragile countries around the world, including those in Africa and the Sahel region. In 2014, Brookings co-hosted with the State of Qatar the 11th annual U.S. Islamic World Forum, during which President Keïta provided some very well-received remarks, and that forum gave birth, among other achievements, to the Tombouctou Renaissance Initiative, which promotes peace and prosperity through culture in Mali and is still active today with the support of His Excellency and the Malian authorities. So thank you, Mr. President, for your leadership on the issue. As I look at the situation in Mali today, I've become increasingly convinced that it is not a Malian problem alone. It is not a Sahel problem alone. It's not even an African problem alone. It is a global problem. Terrorism activities have become increasingly complex, sophisticated, and interconnected. In other words, it has also become a globalized activity. And the risk of spillovers across national borders and across continents have never been greater. And to adapt a quote from Martin Luther King, I firmly believe that fragility and instability anywhere in the world is a threat to security and stability everywhere. The global implications of the problem therefore require that we come together as a global community, step up our engagement to support the regional efforts, capitalize on the project and the progress made so far, and to decisively win the battle in Mali and the Sahel so we won't have to fight it in the United States, in Europe, in Asia, or elsewhere. In my view, a victory is not just defined as a military victory, as a victory that does not address the fundamental causes of fragility and insecurity will likely be short-lived. The complexity of the situation requires an interdisciplinary approach, a multifaceted solutions involving economic development, social and cultural interventions to win the minds and the hearts of the populations. This explains Brookings' keen interest in the nexus between security, economic development, and humanitarian issues. And I couldn't have thought of a better moderator for the conversation than Brookings' own president, John Allen. As you know, John is a retired U.S. Marine Corps four-star general and a former commander of NATO International Security Assistance Force and U.S. forces in Afghanistan. Under his presidency, Brookings' work on fragility, security, and economic development nexus has received renewed impetus, and we look forward to sharing the results and recommendations from the work of our experts on this subject. As part of John's post-retirement diplomatic roles, he served as a special presidential envoy to the Global Coalition to Counter ISIL, the insurgency in the Middle East. His experience is then very, very, very valuable for the conversation and for the quest for solution both in the Sahel and globally. With this, I'll stop here. And please join me to welcome to the podium His Excellency Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta.
First of all,
tout d'abord, j'aimerais vous remercier de votre présence ici aujourd'hui. Malheureusement, je ne parle pas couramment l'anglais, donc je vais parler en français.
Institution. General Allen.
Mr. Allen, President of the Brookings Institute, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to, first of all, thank you. I'd like to thank the leadership of Brookings Institute, as well as the African diplomatic community in Washington, D.C., and the Friends of Mali for the very warm welcome that you have shown us here today when we have come, as we came here to this beautiful city in the United States. It is a great pleasure for me to be here on this solemn occasion and to thank you from the bottom of my heart for the wonderful outpouring of hospitality you have shown in inviting me to come here and to speak with you in this wonderful temple of knowledge that I call Brookings. And I was pleased to accept this invitation because this is a point in time where we need to be working together to support peace, and we have a duty to work together and to collaborate, which is why I'm here today. The opportunity to be able to be here with you today, with this distinguished audience, is a wonderful opportunity for me to be able to lay out my vision for the Sahel in order to promote initiatives to face our security challenges, and to also explain the main political orientations for my platform to promote development in Mali. As you know, Mali is facing many crises, And I know that everyone here today would like to know what we have been doing in Mali in order to ensure that there is peace, security, and development, because this is a crucial nexus. There is a crucial link between the two. Today's meeting is also a very timely meeting, because this is part of an effort to an overall effort to promote a multi-track diplomacy that is necessary for us to strengthen the image of Mali and to showcase the progress that Mali has made, as well as its investment opportunities. It comes as no surprise that Brookings Institute has been so available and ready to cooperate with the government of Mali, and that it has provided invaluable support in promoting its rich cultural heritage through the Timbuktu Renaissance Initiative. And for this, I thank you sincerely. This is an initiative that was recently launched, and we were pleased to receive representatives from Brookings in Bamako. But to come back to the topic of the day, I would like to remind you that the Sahel is a vast region that stretches from the Atlantic to the Red Sea. From the Atlantic, as I said, to the Red Sea, and it is also now considered to be one of the most fragile regions in the world. Indeed, this region is now facing crises that are not only climatic crises, environmental, economic, and security crises. And yet, this region has not always had such challenges. History shows us that even as far back as the 11th and 12th centuries, this region was teeming with rich life based on exchanges between North Africa and the West African coast. And we see this in references of many works that have been written talking about the history of this and also works by economists. And we've seen these types of exchanges since the Middle Ages. Powerful empires and kingdoms, Songhai, Kanem-Borno, Mossi, Bambara, have all developed in this region. Today, with significant population growth, we are seeing formidable challenges. These challenges are not only in the area of food self-sufficiency, but human life is also highly affected by the ever-changing climate. And climate change is a daily challenge for us in our region. So I'm sure you can imagine, in a global context of climate change, this zone, which is already quite fragile, is suffering significantly from the impacts and the negative effects of climate change. However, the crisis that most threatens survival in this zone of the Sahel, from my point of view, is the security crisis. I believe that this is the most pressing challenge we face. As you know, my country, Mali, like many other countries in the region, is facing a formidable challenge in terrorism. Imagine that so-called Muslims coming from other places, coming from outside of our country, to supposedly teach us Islam, when we all know that Timbuktu was the birthplace of Islamic culture since the 10th century. And Sangare, all these different cultures were present, and they were all part of the Islamic faith. So everybody is aware of the very important role that this region played in the promotion of Islamic culture. Since 2012, Mali has also been facing a significant security crisis. Since I started my first term as President of the Republic, my government has worked tirelessly to combat this dangerous phenomenon, working with other states in the region, in particular Burkina Faso, Mauritania, Niger, and Chad, we came together and we quickly understood that none of our countries working alone could face this challenge and overcome it. We realized that we had to pool our efforts, work together. And we did this through an organized system in the creation of the G5 Sahel. This was in 2015. And we have made a lot of progress since then. Today, we have now a G5 Sahel joint force, which has been set up in the five states. We also understood that the joint force could not have simply a defense objective. In the crisis in the Sahel, the terrorists have also been able to prosper because of the other conditions in the Sahel. So development is an essential, fundamental issue. There is a very crucial link between defense and development. And so we have, again, worked together, pooled our efforts and our resources, and working with our partners as well, who has also understood the impact of the potential impact of this project, and they've seen how powerful this initiative can be. They have worked with us to create this Sahel Joint Force and to help us to promote our development and security initiatives. So the G5 Sahel Joint Force is a perfect example of our common commitment to face the security challenges and to tackle development issues in the Sahel. In this, I also salute the international community for its support, in particular the United States, for the support that they have provided to promote the G5 Sahel initiatives and the funding that has already been provided from the United States in the amount of $60 million. Mali very much appreciates the American decision to provide bilateral support for the implementation of the G5 Sahel force. However, I am convinced that this war on terror is a phenomenon that plagues the entire world and threatens all of humanity. It has to be waged in the Middle East, in Europe, as well as in the Sahel. This is why I believe that international solidarity must be solidified if we want to eradicate this phenomenon. I often talk about this in the following terms. It's like it's a dike, like a dam, that protects us and holds back the waters. If we work together with the international community, if all countries who have the same who share the same values and who believe in the importance of human life, these countries have been can all work together to fight this phenomenon. But we see that now this is coming into our zone. And it's also coming from areas such as Libya. This is why it is important to strengthen initiatives such as operational technical capacity building, as well as financial capacities and initiatives on the regional level. And these must be supported even more so by the international community, because this is something that is that infects the entire world, and the entire world must understand that this cannot be allowed to continue and to overflow into other areas. The available of sustainable and predictable funding, including through the United Nations, is an indispensable condition to ensure that this fight is successful. When we are looking at the operations that we are starting to initiate, and if we have to stop them because we have a lack of funding, that would be an absolute catastrophe. And so, Mr. Allen, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, in Mali, we are a people who love peace and justice. And with the American people, we share the same values of democracy and respect for human dignity. This is why Mali places so much importance on issues related to human rights and good governance. The exercise in democracy is a long-term effort, and often our progress has not been sufficiently highlighted in the face of the challenges of the day and the uncertainties. The presidential elections in Mali, which allowed the Malian people to renew their vote of confidence in me, is solid proof that democracy is becoming firmly rooted in Mali. In the context in which we are living, we must make sure that we continue our efforts, that we must carry out this work until the end. Some might say that this is impossible, and some say that we don't have the proper security conditions or that the area is not stable. But things are starting to move, and there are maybe inter-ethnic tensions, but Mali will persevere. We have understood that there are important issues that are at stake here, not just for us, but for all the different situations we are facing. We must ensure that we, first of all, have a very transparent process, that it is as transparent and as inclusive as possible. So we have therefore set up a system for what we call exceptional review of our voter list. Because often in Africa, this is also an experience we've seen many times in Africa, where there has been issues or problems with voter registration lists. They're not reliable, and various other problems that plague the elections. So the Malian voter lists were reviewed, but this we did not stop there. We went even further. We felt that the revised voter list should also be reviewed by a moral authority, a recognized moral authority. So the OIF, the International Organization of Francophonie, lent us their expertise and sent us experts to review our list to ensure that they were reliable and accurate, working with Malian experts who also attested to the reliability of these lists. And it was even approved by the head of the opposition. So we felt that we went into our elections in a transparent, peaceful situation, even a very communal and atmosphere. And after our elections, we have other priorities as well that we are continuing to focus on. Just before the presidential elections were held, a few hours before the polling stations were opened, we undertook, working through an African Union mission led by the former president of Benin, undertook a mission to make sure that everything was reviewed and we ensured that when the elections took place, that there would not be any fraud. However, this request to accept people from the opposition party to be able to have their registrations renewed. We also agreed to this, allowed this, even though this was not necessarily something that we had. Their advisors had to be re-registered, were supposed to have been re-registered 15 days before, 2 days or 2 weeks before, but we still allowed this even up until the elections. And in all of the different polling places, we had an observer for the majority party and an observer, electoral observer for the minority party. When the elections were held, the challenger felt that this new composition was perhaps not favorable, and felt that there had been some bias towards the majority party, and so we dealt with this problem right away, and we agreed to all these requests, and all this to ensure that our Malian elections were entirely credible, because this was important. The entire world was watching our elections. The entire world was concerned. We had a very heavy responsibility, because since the start of the Malian crisis, the international community has mobilized on a massive scale to help Mali. So Mali has a duty to be accountable and to do everything we possibly can to do everything within our power to have credible elections, which is what we did. So following these elections, we were very pleased to see that overall, out of all those who'd come to observe the elections, both national electoral observers and international observers deemed these elections to be fair and credible. So this is what we were working to achieve. We did this as a matter of honor, a matter of dignity. So since the new government has begun, and after the presidential elections, I have decided to task the new government and with priorities, and to also show the trust that we have in our youth. When I talk about trust in our youth, this is not something that we just throw out as a matter of course, but this comes from a very deep-seated conviction, and also based on realism. In our countries, and particularly in Mali, the majority of the population, 60% of the population, is young, very young. The future is in the hands of our young people. The world is theirs, so they have to be part of the decision-making process. We have to prepare them to be part of the decision-making process. They must be included in decision-making so that they can also help govern our country. And that is what the Ministry of Foreign Affairs has been working on. And not because she's a woman. She was designated, I chose her, appointed her to be Minister of Foreign Affairs, not because she's a woman, but because we know she's competent, and we have a lot of confidence in our youth. So that's why she was chosen to hold this position. And in this new government, we also wanted to keep our word and fulfill our commitments, keep our promises, because we've always been very impressed and very interested in the issue of promoting gender equality. For us, it's not a gift that we're giving. We're not giving a gift to women. It's a matter of justice. And when we worked, and we have been working on these issues, and it's not simply a matter of appointing women to some positions, but we are trying to also make sure that women have the same opportunities, and we recognize the immense talent that they have. That's why they are there, because of their talent, not because of their gender. And if we do this, and if we are able to have more women in the government, then so much the better. Right now, we have 34% women in the government, and I'm not really happy with that percentage, but that's the current percentage, and we also have five main priorities for our government. We are working, first of all, to promote better governance and political and institutional reforms, to promote inclusive growth, to promote the development of human capital and social inclusion. And this is also important for a country like Mali, where we can see very clearly on a daily basis how much we are progressing, but how we are looking also to promote environmental progress to deal with climate change, because we're seeing how our riverbeds are drying up. We're seeing climate effects on our country every day. We're seeing effects on the Niger River. And we must look at all the science. We must use this to see, because often it's very difficult to even navigate this river because of the sand dunes that have been increasing. So if we do not take more steps to prevent these impacts, then the Niger River is simply going to become a memory at some point. And if it continues to be impacted by nature and by climate effects, because there's also the effects of wind and wind deposits and other climate impacts, and if we see all the different impacts, we see that there's mining, mercury, or gold, and other mining activities. But this is all things that need to be taken into account, these activities along that are conducted along the Nile River, and we need to protect our river so that we'll be there in the future. So we're promoting sustainable development and a sustainable response to climate change. Finally, we're focusing our efforts on diplomacy, international cooperation, and partnership to ensure that we are stakeholders in promoting the aspirations of our people and also promoting the rights of humanity that we hold so dear. Our efforts have enabled us to bring Mali from a situation of almost no growth or even minus 0.5% growth to now a situation where we have an annual growth rate of 5%. So we have made a lot of progress, and we've been very pleased to note that in our zone, in the West African Economic Monetary Union, WAMU, and ECOWAS zone, out of the 8 member states, we are the 3rd largest economy in our economic region. And within ECOWAS, we are working in this area as well. And we are a major actor. We have been well ranked within among the countries in terms of our debt rating. We've made significant progress there. We have a debt capacity that is still far from being exhausted, about 30%, whereas ECOWAS authorizes us to have almost up to 70% debt capacity. So this shows you that Mali still has a lot of hope in this and a lot of ambition in this area. We have also been focusing on the living conditions of our population, looking at our social needs. And we have seen that we received a grant of almost a jump in almost 200 million euros in order to help develop energy in our country. And we have a lot of ambitious projects to add value to our industries and the agricultural industry. This would be impossible if we didn't have an energy sector that was improved, because if it stays at the state that it is today, we will not be able to develop other sectors. Right now, we have 350 megawatts available of electricity, and we are hoping to increase this to 700 million megawatts. And people know that I have been working on trying to advance these projects very rapidly. But this all to say that these are issues that we take very seriously, and we are sure that we will be making continued progress in the future. We are also trying to increase employment and to provide 200,000 new jobs. And we have also created 222,000 new jobs. And so this is very promising for the future. So we are also the leading producer of cotton in the Sahel region. Despite our economic challenges, despite the other security challenges, we are still the leading producer of cotton. However, it would have been even better if we were able to process cotton in our country. Unfortunately, right now, we only are able to process 2% of the cotton we produce. So there's a lot of room for added value in this industry, and we are looking for partners amongst our friends. And we will be working with partners such as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and seeking other partnerships as well. We are also the leading livestock industry in the WAMU region. We are the 3rd leading producer of gold in Africa after South Africa and Ghana. And as I said earlier, we have an annual growth rate of 5%, which I still feel is not sufficient. And the Ministry of Finance and Economy has promised to continue working on this and to increase it in the coming months. So we're really hoping that he'll be able to do that, and we'll support him in his efforts. So this is the overall picture I wanted to give you of Mali. And again, I would like to sincerely thank you. Thank you for all the interest that you have shown in Mali. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you and for coming out in such large numbers. It's been a pleasure to be able to share our experiences with you and to talk about these common issues we have. Thank you very much.
Merci. Well, Mr. President, thank you so much for joining us today. We are deeply honored that you would be, you would find the time in an incredibly busy schedule to join
us. My pleasure.
At the Brookings Institution. How do you hear me, sir?
I'm trying.
Find me someone 13 years old, quickly. Could we get someone up here?
Channel 2. I'm a room. Thank you. Thank you. Wait.
Yes, I can hear you. Everything is okay now.
Okay.
Well, we're deeply honored that you could find the time in an incredibly busy schedule to join us here at Brookings today. We know how important your time is, and it would be difficult to overstate how honored and privileged we feel that you would find the time to be with us. And let me also welcome the remainder of your delegation, who is traveling with you, but also to welcome the excellencies and diplomats and scholars for whom Africa is such an important subject. We are honored to have an important world leader here today, but we're also deeply grateful, Mr. President, for the vital African voice that you bring to this institution today to help us to understand how you see the challenges that you face every day in Mali, but also the challenges of Africa. But very importantly, you have given us a glimpse of your vision for how you will lead Mali into the future, not just as a leader of Mali, but a leader in Africa, and as Mali sets the example in the way and the days ahead. So we're really grateful for your taking the time to be with us today. And, sir, we have several questions for you. And as our senior fellow, Brahima Koulibaly, said at the beginning of the introduction, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, we ask you to write it on a card. We will collect these, and they'll be delivered to me in a few minutes. And we'll have about 20 minutes at the end, sir, to offer you the opportunity to respond. But if I may, I'd like to begin by asking you, Mr. President, if you could discuss the state of security in the Sahel since the 2015 Algiers Peace Accord. And in addition, what priority actions do you believe can be taken to improve collaboration at the local level, at the national level, regionally, and with international partners?
Thank you, General. Thank you very much. Alan, you're, as you know, a coalition. No matter what its ambition is, its desires are, it is only worthwhile if all of the different elements that make up the coalition are able to contribute to the coalition or play their role. So that's why, General Allen, I feel that my first priority as a Malian was to improve the strength of our armed forces when I took office. And we have a country that is very large, 1,240,000 square kilometers. And it's impossible to reach some areas without helicopters in some areas of Mali. So as you can understand, my first priority was to train the Malian army. Today, for the first time in about 10 years, we have seen a strong military on September 22nd, just a week ago, which was the occasion to organize a gathering where we showed our people what we have done and how much we have been able to accomplish in the 5 years of my term. Now, of course, there's still much work to be done. We have not done everything. We have 11 airplanes in the Malian budget. And what is important for us and for the Minister of Finance is that we are trying to tackle all the issues that we have had with managing public finances. And thanks to our efforts to clean up public finances, we've been able to purchase these 11 aircraft, cargo planes, helicopters. And when I get back to my country, we will be working on some of the areas that are still inaccessible except by air, because we need to be able to have access to all these areas. Now, we have also been assisted by the international community, supported by the European Union through the European Union training missions that I'm sure you're familiar with, the UTEM missions, and also through the CAP, because there's also a security aspect in this security initiative. So UCAP has also been working with us to help train our police officers and our gendarmerie. And this is all done within the context also of fighting against terrorism, because often the terrorists are hiding amongst the population. This is a very classic problem where it's an asymmetric fight along the borders. And I'm sure you're well aware of this as much as I know it as well as I do. So that was the first priority. And this, I've been very happy to see the progress made by the G5 Sahel and with my colleagues. And we are working together. Of course, it's good to say, yes, let's work together, but what is it we want to accomplish? And as they said in Potsdam, famously, Potsdam, what is it we want to accomplish? This is, as our Joint Chiefs of Staff knows well, we are focusing on how we're able to strengthen our security forces. And we're doing this through an organized approach to our methods. We've understood that we need to have more guidelines and military training and forming. And over 5 years, we will have a program to be able to set aside the necessary resources to equip and train our army. So this is a five-year plan, and this has enabled us to make the progress that we have made and to reach the level that we are at today. And we have Malians who have been trained as professional soldiers. And when you look at, for example, the town hall in Gao and the soldiers that are there, you will see a Malian soldier next to a French one. And when I saw that, it brought tears to my eyes for the first time. The French soldier was armed, was well-equipped with everything he needed. But the Malian soldier did not have anything, did not have the necessary equipment. He was barely wearing sandals. He didn't have boots. He had an extremely outdated rifle. And that brought tears to my eyes, General Allen. And I said to myself on that day that this is something that I will not have accomplished anything if I'm not able to improve our army and our defense. So this is something that I've been working on very strongly with the G5 Sahel coalition. So that is in part answer to your question. We need to be working with our partners at the regional level, but also our joint force needs additional support. If the joint forces does not have the assurance of sustainable financing, sustainable regular funding sources, we will not be able to deploy soldiers to the field and to have the proper logistics and equipment if we don't have these resources. After 2 days, if they don't have the resources, they'll either be suffering from hunger or won't have the necessary equipment. So we're asking the international community to support us in this. Our budget is 423 million euros. this to defend, and this is not an excessive budget, to defend this region. And yet we still have funding shortages, a funding gap. So this is why the United Nations is supporting us. And we have been able to convince them that this initiative should be put on the UN agenda. And we are working to make sure that this is not only a multilateral effort, but also a bilateral effort, such as the support from the United States. So also, we are very appreciative of the U.S. support and the flintlock exercises. And this has really helped us to achieve a much higher level. So this is something that we are continuing to promote, and this is something we want you to help us do. You can't do it in our place. This is something we have to do on our own, but we need support. And we are here at this level, and we have a lot of we're really concerned about making sure that we can have this security force in order to protect the dignity of our people, because they are a people who have a lot of dignity, and they are citizens of the world as well. We're actors of the world and part of this century. So this is what I would answer.
We know that these challenges seem immense. And you've had a very busy week in conjunction with the UN General Assembly and the meetings that have occurred on the periphery and in the margins of the UN General Assembly. Were you satisfied, sir, that the meetings at the General Assembly sufficiently addressed the fragility of the Sahel region and the gap which exists between security and humanitarian assistance and development? Is that agency, is the UN fully invested in understanding that problem and beginning to set the conditions to begin to address it?
General Allen, I don't know exactly how to answer that, especially when we talk about the UN mission, for example, the multinational UN mission, MINUSMA, which has been set up in Mali, but it's suffered a lot of human loss in human life and also a lot of material loss. And I'm sure that we are aware, we have the memory of all those who have been lost in the Sahel. And there are approximately 30 different nationalities that are part of this mission. So MINUSMA has had a very strong presence, but is continuing to be there, and it's a very strong presence. But the United Nations and the world, and what I say to my fellow countrymen, is that we need to be careful. Because there was a time when everybody is looking at you. The whole world is looking at you. But things are changing so quickly that the situation could change abruptly from one day to another. And you must be careful if you lose your momentum, because we have to continue fighting this fight. For us, it is important that the peace agreement, peace and reconciliation agreement, that we have laboriously worked on to establish with all the different Malian partners that we negotiated in Algiers, that this is something that comes to fruition, and this is something that we hold to, that we attach a lot of importance to. This agreement must be fully implemented, and it is an urgent matter. We understand that we cannot simply be, that we are a little bit impatient, but we also realize that in Mali, at the moment of the International Conference on Resource Mobilization for the OECD in Paris, we were promised funding, which still has yet to come, and that was in 2015. And we're still waiting to receive these funds. General Allen, in March of 2018, We also had another meeting in Brussels, and during this meeting, many commitments were made. But again, we're still looking to the heavens to see if the skies, to see if the planes are going to fly over and drop these funds on us. So it's a problem. There's a lot of impatience, but yet the reality is that on the ground, the resources are still lacking to implement this agreement. And it would be a very stupid move to not do everything we could to promote this agreement. And there's really no reason to drag our feet on this. If we're doing this, if this is the case, it's because we're still waiting to have certain commitments fulfilled. And if all these commitments were fulfilled and the promises were fulfilled, then I would say, General Allen, that the dividends of peace, if the people were able to support the peace process, then I think this would bring about a huge change. And we would see a complete change between the post-situation and the pre-situation and the post-situation. And in this situation, right now, we have to see what the dividends of peace are, what the added value is of peace. And these dividends are that social needs are met, that roads are built, that airports are constructed, hospitals are built, and that there are centers of information and education. And this is all things that we have planned for, that we have promised our people, and yet there's still a singular issue, a singular problem. We have to have solidarity. We have to have funding. We can't just live off promises. We have plans we need to manage, and yet somewhere along the way, we have to also ensure that this peace is firmly rooted. As you know, General, this is in this fight against terrorism. This is not something that can be done simply by one country. This is not a gift.
Mr. President, I think you have accurately identified that we must have in Mali and in the five states the kind of security platform through developed security forces, through relationships between the security forces and the international community, to create the platform upon which credible government can emerge and economic opportunity can emerge. And you've given us that vision, and I think that sounds exactly right in terms of the roadmap that you've set for both your people and the region. Mm-hmm. As you have worked so hard to adopt democracy and to strengthen democratic institutions, how do you reconcile at this moment a strong capacity for the government to be accountable, but also at the same time the decentralization of governance in order to accomplish your objectives?
General Allen, I'm strongly convinced, and I have been for some time, that decentralization is the way forward. And we were among some of the first in Africa to initiate a process of decentralization under President Konaré in 1992. Today, we are continuing to promote this effort, and we are doing what we can to make sure that decentralization is becoming a greater reality and that there is true and effective transfer of power, of governance, from the central to a more decentralized situation. And this is all something that was included in the Peace and Reconciliation Agreement for Mali. And today, in the run-up to 2018, 30% of our resources are to be transferred, and I hope that the Minister of Finance is paying attention to this, but we have been a little bit delayed in some of this in terms of the institutional reforms. There are some reforms that we have not been able to implement, until we've been able to reform our constitution. General, when we begin, when we began this process, it was difficult. As you know, constitutional reform is something that strikes fear in the hearts of people in Africa. When you say we're going to reform or modify the constitution, they say, oh, they want to just make sure he's a president for life. But that's not the case. But quite simply, the peace agreement for Mali obliges us to implement a constitutional reform, because throughout the Malian crisis, we noticed one thing, is that the traditional leaders, traditional chiefs, opinion leaders and community leaders have real influence. And so when there's a crisis, people turn to them. We seek them out. And sometimes once the crisis is over, we forget them. So we wanted to see how we could integrate them and include them into the institutional system, how we could, for example, create a Senate. We can't create a Senate if we don't include everybody in Mali. And also, General, there's something also that I personally am very attached to, and that is the fight against corruption. We talk a lot about it, especially in Africa. We talk about Africa having a corruption problem. But in Africa, we also have limited resources. So these types of problems, corruption, costs a lot to our societies. And in working to fight corruption and illegal enrichment through corruption, we have adopted a very instrumental legal-ish instrument, the Court of Accounts. And all the countries of the Wemu region have this type of a Court of Accounts. And every time I try to explain to the other heads of state that these courts have to be put into place, we realize that it's not always an easy undertaking, but this is a reform that has to be done. We cannot delay it. We cannot defer it. And there has been a lot of misinformation about this process, perhaps, but it's a complicated process. And the reform of the Constitution has had a few delays, but it is indispensable. It's something we absolutely must do. In order to make this a reality in terms of our governance, people need to have the feeling that they have a say in their destiny, that they have a say in the decisions that are being made that affect their daily lives. And that is also an essential, vital issue that we are trying to promote.
Let me extend this question a bit, and then we'll go to questions from the audience, if I may, sir.
Pardon. On écoutait rebelle. C'est bon.
We just mentioned a moment ago, Mr. President, the inherent relationship between security, governance, and economic development. And you've just given us insights into what steps you are taking to deal both with creating accountability in government, but also to deal specifically with the issue of corruption. And as I think we all know here, corruption is one of the most corrosive effects on democracy and young democracies. So I certainly applaud, and I think we would all here applaud, the steps that you're taking, both to build and to strengthen institutions of democracy, to hold those accountable who need to be held accountable, but also to directly attack institutions of corruption. If we have a good security platform, and if we have the capacity to govern, that sets the conditions then for economic development. Mr. President, how do you see the creation of opportunity to bring the private sector along and also to invite foreign investment in Mali to create that strengthened economic component of your governance that can enhance your stability even more and enhance your capacity for development even more?
Merci, Dina.
Thank you, General Allen, for that question. And I would say that our country, like all other countries in developing countries, especially in Africa, needs support. We need investment in all areas. And we need a lot of investment. But the climate for investment has to be, first of all, one of security and stability. And I've been explaining some of the efforts that we've been undertaking to ensure that our region is a livable region, a secure region, and that in Mali we are no longer in the red, but we have a very good climate for investment. We've been working on reforming our code of investment so that it is and it already is a very favorable law, but we're still working on it. And in doing business, I think we're pretty well rated in West Africa on the Doing Business Index. And I think that investors are attracted by what we've been doing in terms of economics, the progress we've made, that our country has been improving our economy with our growth rate, that in this context, our country is one of the leading producers in the Sahel region. Producing 9 million tons, 62%. And we're also, as I said, the leading producer of cotton. And this is one of the best fibers, one of the best fibers in the world. So there's a huge potential for textile development in Mali. And I would also say that we also have a lot of room for added value. As I said, leading producer of cotton in Africa, but we can add value if we can process it locally, if we have the facilities, the infrastructure to process it locally, which would also create more jobs for our young people. And it would also increase revenues for our producers as well as creating jobs for our young people, and also enable us to sell raw cotton on the world market, but also process it locally. I think today that we have a position, we're in a position where, as I said, we are the third leading producer of gold in the world, and we have only just started beginning to refine the gold. And the Malian producers have not been able to achieve their potential. We don't really haven't reached our potential for production. It's still not sufficient. And General Allen, I would say that this is not something that's going to happen miraculously. This is something that's because of the policies we've been implementing. We decided, for example, that during the Mobutu summit in Africa, and we decided that every African country would pay 10% of its annual budget into this fund for development in Africa. And with my government, we have been focusing on the economic sector, and we've decided not to allocate 10%, but 15%. Also, we have been subsidizing our agricultural industry, not only to make sure that it is more mechanized, because in the 21st century, our countries are still quite behind in terms of our mechanization, and this has been a huge drawback for us and a stumbling block to our production. So we've been setting up mechanisms to promote a program, a tractor program that we're subsidizing. And at least 1,300 new tractors have been injected into this circuit. So this has had a huge impact. And some of the results that I have described earlier are the fruits of these policies. So our farmers are seeing that we have confidence in them. And because of these subsidies, they are able to equip themselves with modern means of production. So these efforts are all areas of hope for us for the future. We have 1 million hectares of farmable land because of thanks to irrigation from the Nile River. And we also have a system that dates back to 1968. It was a French agronomist who helped develop this irrigation system. And this helped us to develop 1 million hectares of land. But out of these, out of this land that's been developed, I think that we still have quite a bit. We still have 130,000 million hectares. And so we have a huge potential. You can see the great potential. So there's a lot of hope. There's work to be done, efforts to be made. And I think that still in the field of agriculture, there's a lot of potential there, but also in the industrial sector. Products that today are helping to feed major industries, but our industries need electricity. We need energy, and so it's also an imperative for us, and I'm saying this also for the ministers in the room, that we need to have more partners to develop our energy sector in Mali so that we have we are able to have small producers and large producers who can provide jobs and who can continue to promote growth in our country. So again, I think there's hope. But also, another issue that we can't overlook is the legal framework. If people are to invest in our country, they have to feel assured. They have to have the assurance that we have a sound legal framework that will be favorable to investment and that will, and that their rights will be respected. And in we are also focusing our efforts on our legal instruments. This is something that's an imperative, the legal framework, regulatory framework, and this has all been put in place to help promote investments.
President, obviously, transparency, judicial accountability, the capacity for your system to arbitrate for your foreign partners will be a strong incentive for them to feel comfortable with the kinds of foreign direct investment that can truly be of assistance to your economic development. And if I may ask, Mr. President, your principal foreign partners on your infrastructure and your energy, can you talk to us a bit about who those partners are and how they're helping?
Well, General, Mali is a country that is open to international partners. We don't give priority to one partner over another. We're not exclusive. We're open to any type of partnership in the sense that as long as it's going to be a win-win situation for both parties. We're very open to working with anybody. We don't really play favorites. And so we also want all countries in the world to trust us, and those who have dared to come to Mali, despite the context that I described, despite the problems, these partners have not left us. Those who have dared to come have still stayed with us, such as the United States. They've stood with us. Unfortunately, they're coming in fewer numbers right now, but we still have a lot of solid partners.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it from the president. Mali is open for business.
Totally.
Mr. President, these questions are from your friends on the floor. This is an important question. Given the demographic nature of your population, the youth, and the expanding youth within your population, what some call the youth bulge, are there specific programs that you envisage or that you're undertaking to work the basic education and the basic skills necessary for your young and youthful population to be credible contributors to the future of Mali? Often we see a flight of talent from countries where they have a sense that they have no future, either with the government or with the economy. How do you see taking advantage of this young population and setting them up for success, not just for themselves, but for your country?
Well, General, this is a very vital question. In our countries, the demographic bulge is something that sometimes is seen as something that's a problem that where we don't have hope. And when you look at the economic problems and you look at the demographics, it sometimes seems pessimistic. But these problems are also complicated by the fact that when you look at also religious considerations and that interfere. And you see that sometimes there are taboos or different issues that come into play. But in a country like Mali today, these issues are very much on the agenda. And we are open to working with everybody, working on religious issues, and even working on family planning. We're very open to this because we feel that the head of a family has a sacred duty to provide for his or her family as much as possible and to provide a life of dignity for everybody who is dependent on him. So it is clear that a family that is perhaps maybe too large and they can't provide for them, that this is a problem, especially if the resources are limited. So we have also been trying to work on ensuring that our human resources are more qualified, better trained, and even where we don't necessarily have the material resources or where they're lacking, we are still able today to be one of the leading countries in terms of improving the quality of our human resources. So we are we really would like to see that we feel that any country that isn't really focusing on improving the quality of their human resources is not a country that's going to be able to keep up tomorrow, because the youth are going to be the they have to be qualified, they have to have the skills and the job training. As I'm sure you know, we have to be able to have human resources that can we can't necessarily just hold their hands. We have to be able to train them to then take over themselves after. It's not just a matter of business or training, but we are interdependent. We can't just stand alone. We're interdependent, and in this world of interdependence, everything has to be based on quality, and quality comes through education. This is why for about the past 10 years, we have been putting into place a program to develop our educational system. We call it the ODEC program. And we are progressively, gradually improving the quality of our educational resources to improve our human resources, because of the different crises we've had over the past few years, we have seen a drop in this level, and we are trying to support them and to promote the quality of our human resources. We're also very concerned, despite despite some of these issues that we're facing, we also have to look at basic research, and especially in the field of agriculture, for example. Mali has a fair amount of experience and has a pretty good reputation in agriculture research, especially in our sub-region. We have a center of excellence, and it's a source of pride for us. So for us, school and education is a whole part of this effort to manage our funds and to manage our human resources, to manage the migration of people. And we often don't have the means to deal with all the migration that we're facing. And so with these resources, we're trying to focus more on the growing numbers of young people, rather, who want to go to school and who want to improve their lives. And that's a major point of focus. As a teacher, we know the value of education and culture. And this is a very, very big priority for me. We have a lot of needs in this area, a lot of urgent needs, but we have not been able to, we have still much work to do.
The challenge, Mr. President, is as you equip the youth with the education that they need, convincing those young women and men that their future is tied irrevocably to the future of Mali is the challenge that you face as the leader of your country. Because often in many countries like this, once educated, the youth leave. Or if unable to be educated, they are recruited by the extremists. And that, of course, then is a strike, a blow against stability. So the education in a country like Mali is really central to your strategic future. And it's great to hear that that is a major priority for you. But stability in the entire region is also something that we've heard from you today is important to you. And to what extent, Mr. President, does the stability of Libya impact the stability of Mali?
General Allen, I have to say that we're sort of like we're collateral victims of the damage from Libya. It's not just the Libyans who suffered. The Libyan crisis made the southern part of Libya a huge market for weapons trafficking, arms trafficking. And these arms are flowing into various directions, are flowing into Chad, Niger, and into Mali. And these are weapons that we have to deal with. We've seen so many problems because we've been such a victim of this, that these weapons are sophisticated weapons, and they're circulating in our countries very freely. They're being openly sold on the market just like other products. And we also have to fight the trafficking of small arms in the region. We're very concerned. And I was saying it just yesterday, General, or the day before yesterday, when we had the high-level meeting at the United Nations for the Sahel that we had the honor of attending. And this is something that has now become a regular activity as part of the General's Assembly meetings. But Libya is a problem. And as long as the situation in Libya has not been dealt with and hasn't been stabilized, then I can assure you that our efforts to promote peace are doomed to failure. And it pains me to say that. It's a very serious thing to say. But as long as we still have these factions of Libyan combatants, as long as we still have Libyan warlords, we will not have peace in the south. And we also have a rather unique and somewhat unfair criminal system, something that is unheard of in the 21st century, where there's still slavery. Our young people are sometimes being taken as slaves into the northern part of the country. They're taken to the desert, and sometimes they are lured to the northern part in the hopes of being taken to across the Mediterranean, but they are taken as slaves. And so there's been this huge slave trade that's been going on. And these people, in recent documents, we've seen this scandalous problem with some of our young people being taken slaves into Libya. So this has become intolerable for humanity, for the human condition, and today this is not tolerable for the human state at the level of development where we are today. We should no longer see this. Libya has become a center of absolute destabilization. And everybody's aware of this. And we are victims of the collateral damage from Libya. And we would like everything to be done by the international community, by the UN, to ensure that Libya can finally be stabilized so that there is a state restored to Libya. There is not a state today.
And Brookings is looking very hard right now at the Libya situation and what potential policy outcomes might be recommended. Your voice is very important in that process. And related to that, Mr. President, and this will be the last question that we'll ask you this afternoon, how do you see over the long term the continued French military presence in Mali? And whether you see at some point perhaps the G5 joint force taking over the French presence, or do you see an international military presence there for some period of time?
General Allen, no foreign military force has really a mission or a mandate to stay there forever, to stay in a foreign country forever. The context and the conditions dictate that there has to be an evolution on the ground. When this Sival operation was conducted in Mali in 2013, this was something that we were very happy to see. It was wonderful because when the government failed, when the state failed, when there was no longer a state, and we saw all the consequences related to that, the Malian state was a failed state at that time. And when this occurred, a partner came in to save us with the foreign forces that were sent. And this was a plan that was set up to help us. But following this, the nature of the mission has evolved. When it became clear that it was a situation of virulent terrorism, that there were religious extremists, and that there were many issues that we had to face, then the force was not deployed just to Mali, but to the entire Sahel region, from Chad to Mali. And the Barkhane force has been working with many countries such as the United States and other friends, and they have been very successful in Mali, but it's not necessarily a traditional operation, a classic operation, in terms of sending troops and battalions, but they have been setting up units, dispersed units that intervene periodically and that have been a formidable source of support for us. And I would also like to pay tribute to the memory of those who have fallen in the context of this mission. Recently, we had the case of a soldier who was killed because of an IED. And this was an IED that was built out of fertilizer and various materials, and that was easily made by somebody. And that's why we want to make sure that we're trying to work to ensure that fertilizers that are imported in our country are brought in liquid form, so they cannot be used to build bombs. And in fact, just recently, seven soldiers were blown up when their vehicle drove over an IED. So, General Allen, I think that the presence of this mission, the French operation, and other forces, other allied forces, is something that is helping us to deal with the terrorist threat. It's evolving, and it will be evolving as we fight this terrorist threat. But I don't think that it's something that's going to be a permanent mission, because everybody is focused on the same concern. We're all concerned about making sure, or about ensuring that we can live in peace and restore security, because that's all we ask, is to live in peace and security and in dignity.
Mr. President, I want to thank you sincerely for honoring us today with your presence. You've given us important insights into the challenges that you face every day as the president of Mali, but also important insights into the challenges that many African states face today. I want to assure you that the Africa Growth Initiative at Brookings will continue to be seized in studying these issues, and offering hopeful policy options in the future. We value our partnership with you in this regard. And under Brahima Kulabali, we value his leadership, and we look forward to continuing to work with you in the future so that Brookings can be a factor in your continued growth as a nation and your stability. And we're very honored that you could join us this afternoon. And ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking the President of America. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
I would like to also thank you and to say how pleased I am to see that everybody came here to show their interest in Mali and the Sahel. Thank you very much. That is international solidarity. That is international friendship and support. Thank you very much.